Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 115. My name is John. We've been waiting all our lives for things we've always had, but have no eyes to see. Before I begin this month's podcast, I have to take note of the recent passing of two gentlemen who contributed greatly to rock and new wave in the 70s and 80s. Growing up watching an Eddie Money video, he just seemed like one of those cool guys you wanted to hang out with. The guy who wanted to make sure everyone had a good time. Just after his death, one of my favorite bands, Cowboy Mouth, posted a photo of Eddie Money with a story of how he approached them at a music festival where they were all playing and spent the afternoon with them after their set. That just cemented my suspicions that he was a class act. And I'm sad he's gone. My first memory of Rick Ocasek was singing Shake It Up on MTV. But I can never forget his face on the head of an animated fly in You Might Think, or walking on water in Magic. He seemed like an eclectic guy, and I really dug that about him. And I know I'm probably going to catch hell for this, but any guy who can nab a supermodel 21 years younger than he is makes him a bit of a hero to me. Good on you, mate. I don't know if either of these guys would have made it as big in the current era, where photogenic appearance and gaudy showmanship often take precedence over actual musical talent. But this 80s kid will never forget them. They were musicians who brought excellent work to the soundtrack of my youth. Rest in peace, guys. On to this month's monologue. I left religion behind about 15 years ago. Way back in this podcast, I detailed that upheaval in my life that caused me to rethink the religious philosophy I was brought up in. Even though I find myself on the outside of Judeo-Christian philosophies, there are nuggets of wisdom that I feel are worthy of taking along with me in this phase of my life. One phrase that always stuck with me is the words of Solomon from the book of Ecclesiastes. There is nothing new under the sun. There is nothing new under the sun. Some interpret that idea as life is cyclical. You could even say that goes hand in hand with history repeats itself. Others take a more cynical approach, that the same things keep happening, or as I like to think of it, the playing field may change, but the game remains the same. Maybe it's that cynical part of me grasping for an answer to a question that I don't really want to ask. This is a repetitive life, is it not? The world spins on its axis. The Earth spins around the sun. The solar system spins around the galaxy. It stands to reason that life is just going around in circles. Now, keep in mind, that was written about 3,000 years ago. So there's been nothing new under the sun for a very long time, as far as human perspective is concerned. Look around the world right now. Look at this nation. Look at your city, your neighborhood. Look how people are behaving. Look how governments are behaving. Look how people and groups react to each other. Look how they scratch and claw for dominance over each other, over you. all these interactions we have as individuals, as groups, as nations, good and bad, it's all been done. We're going around in circles. The playing field may have changed, but we're still stuck playing the same goddamn game. Just take a look at the past. Maybe a few decades, a few generations, maybe even go back many centuries. But go back and look how people acted, their motivations, the results of their schemes. The more you study, the more parallels can be made to what is happening to us today. Theocratic governments of the past used the ignorance of the citizenry to subjugate them. You wanted knowledge? You had to trust what they gave you, because they were in control of it. What if you didn't believe what they were telling you? What if you had your own observations about reality? Well, when people like Galileo dared to challenge their irrefutable claim that the Earth was the center of the universe, he was jailed. It got so bad for him, he attempted to convince people at his trial that he was just making it up. They made conditions so bad for him that he gave in to their teachings just so he could get his life back. It didn't work. Heretic! How dare you question the holy writ of God? Our word is sacrosanct. What we say is what you are to believe. Today, the holy writ of government tells us humanity-created climate change is settled science. If you so much as question their assertions, you're in danger. People have lost their jobs just for saying they are not 100% sure of the accuracy of the claims. People have been blacklisted for claiming they have proof certain aspects of climate change are wrong, and the pro-climate change crowd refuses to let them present their findings. And yes, those examples are in a previous podcast if you care to know more details. I've gone on about this pretty recently, so I won't do it here, but there are viable explanations out there. When you have scientists, climate scientists, not beholden to government funding, legitimately questioning and providing alternative explanations to the fluctuations in temperatures, it's not settled science. If you really wanted to listen to other opinions rather than blindly accepting what the cult of personality proclaims, you could. This is not difficult information to find out. You want to know how easy it is? I found it. Again, I've detailed this recently, but when you have climate change proponents behaving in ways antithetical to their stated beliefs, why should you be convinced by their rhetoric? Besides, if you're so sure it's settled, then you wouldn't mind us questioning it. Yet, we have celebrities openly advocating jail for climate change deniers. We have a continual barrage of anger and hatred for anyone who won't fall entirely lockstep in with the climate change crowd. Anger and hatred that includes advocating physical violence against questioners. Not outright deniers, but mere questioners of climate change. If you don't practice what you preach, If you act more like you're trying to silence the opposition rather than peacefully promoting your point of view, then I'm going to have a difficult time believing you. I'd rather be a heretic than a hypocrite. It's always been dangerous to be different, to challenge the accepted morality of the times. Democrats over a century ago started a movement in the South where they wore white hoods and robes and terrorized and murdered people who disagreed with them. People of a different skin color were treated, at best, as second-class citizens, and, at worst, as dehumanized game to be hunted and slaughtered. Even people of the same skin color as the Klan were victims of a lynch mob simply for standing up to the idea of equal rights for all people. Today, left-wingers have started a movement predominantly in the West where they wear black masks and combat gear to terrorize and assault people who disagree with them. If you distill fascism to a basic concept, it is government by force, forcing the suppression of the opposition. Hey, like wanting to jail or beat up climate change questioners. Forcing a regimented society. Hey, like telling you what you can or cannot do with your body. Fascism is okay with violence against political opposition because that helps with their vision of national rejuvenation. So, how can you call yourselves anti-fascist when you use force, the primary tool of fascists, against anyone who dares to challenge you? Antifa is fascism. Are you seeing the parallels yet? Do you see the same game that has simply been moved to a different field of play? Do you see there is nothing new under the sun? Or do you need another example? It was happening seemingly every day. People were dying. Families were being torn apart. The moralists vehemently proclaimed that it was all due to the existence of it. If it didn't exist, if it could be banned, then all this needless suffering would simply go away. The moralists mobilized and spread their beliefs. Soon, some places were banning it. That wasn't enough for the moralists. Not until it was banned across the nation. It wasn't enough for it to be banned in their own homes. They wouldn't be happy until it was banned for everyone. Do you know what I'm talking about? Now, given the current political climate, you may think I'm talking about guns. I'm not. Sure, throughout history, the moralists take advantage of every crisis they can to spread fear and panic. And in the case of this nation, to force their legislation on everyone else. And they are certainly doing that every time some evil person uses a gun on defenseless innocents. But what I was talking about goes back over a century ago, when the it they wanted to ban was alcohol. Of course, Anyone with a basic knowledge of American history knows about the era of Prohibition that started almost 100 years ago. What you probably don't know too much about was the decades prior, when the moralists, led by the Women's Christian Temperance Union, slowly chipped away at the natural rights of people. What about the people who made the alcohol, the brewers? Why didn't they fight back? Surely they had the money and the clout to defend themselves against the collective moralists. Oh, you mean the brewers like Anheuser-Busch, Blatz, Schlitz? Let's see, what nationality did the founders of those breweries come from? Oh, yes, the answer is Germany. What about Yingling, the oldest brewery in the United States? You mean the one founded by David Gottlieb Jungling from Germany? What about Pabst, founded by Jacob Best, a German-American? Why does that matter? What country was the United States at war with just prior to the enactment of Prohibition? You guessed it, Germany. German-American communities were being marginalized across the country. It didn't matter that they were the ones producing the beer. People became prejudiced against them because of their name. The moralists took advantage of the German-American community relegated to the shadows to finally push through decades worth of nudging and coercion to ban alcohol in the United States. See, history has shown us, and propaganda gurus advocate, that marginalizing, demonizing, and criminalizing the opposition helps collectivists push through their liberty-depleting legislation. Just like a century ago with alcohol, anyone who does not immediately surrender to gun control advocates' ideas is evil. If you oppose gun laws, even if you question the effectiveness of gun laws, you may as well be pulling the trigger yourself in these mass shootings. Think I'm exaggerating? Hop on social media and look at postings following mass shootings. Itself a term that the media uses to mislead. And I'm not talking about postings from some nobody like myself. I'm talking politicians, pundits, and celebrities stating that gun advocates are to blame for the deaths. That's the picture the propagandists want to paint. Just like in the times leading up to Prohibition, the very existence of alcohol causes poverty and crime. If you're a parent who drinks, your children are twice as likely to die. Children can only remain pure if there is no alcohol in their lives. Allowing greedy alcohol producers to exist means sacrificing women and children. Sound familiar? I mean, I know I'm talking about Prohibition here, but how many times have we been told something needs to be banned because of children? Anyway, as I'm sure you're all aware, during Prohibition, not a single American anywhere in the nation drank even a single drop of alcohol, because prohibiting something means that everyone automatically stops doing it entirely. Just like banning marijuana, cocaine, and heroin means that no one in the United States ever takes any of those illegal drugs. Just like enacting legislation that makes it difficult for immigrants to come into the United States means absolutely no one enters into this country without going through the full and proper channels to achieve citizenship. So, just like all of those other successes over the last century, banning guns will assure that no one ever uses them. Ever. Guaranteed. No. When alcohol was banned, speakeasies and moonshine distillers went underground, as people preferred to be criminals rather than capitulate to freedom-denying legislation. One of my favorite little factoids from the British show Quite Interesting is, during Prohibition in the United States, the FBI sent agents to determine how long it would take to find someone who would sell them alcohol. In Chicago and St. Louis, it took 21 minutes. In Atlanta, it took 17 minutes, and 11 minutes in Pittsburgh. In New Orleans, it took 35 seconds. Prohibition was and is a resounding failure, but it's not just the prohibition of alcohol. We are fighting and miserably losing a decades-long drug war. We are debating the lives of millions of people because of a mountain of mindless bureaucratic legislation on immigration. Yet we keep fucking doing it, don't we? You smokers and vapors out there know exactly what I'm talking about. It doesn't work. Forcing people to surrender their natural rights because your morality makes you fearful simply doesn't work. I've said it so many fucking times before, but so long as you are not hurting others or denying their natural rights, you're allowed to do whatever the hell you want. You want to go somewhere to make a better life for yourself? Well, then the people of that place should appreciate how highly you esteem them. You want to drink alcohol, smoke weed, do some blow, shoot some smack? It's your body and your life to do with as you see fit. As long as you accept the responsibility for your actions instead of me paying for your mistakes, I say enjoy the trip. Don't give me your empty mantra of my body, my choice if you don't fully allow people to do whatever they want with their body, with their lives. And that goes way beyond just what they ingest. You have the natural right to protect your body as you see fit. Good, responsible people have the natural right to defend themselves from whatever danger they perceive. If that means keeping a personal arsenal to do so, then so be it. It's none of your nosy fucking business. Don't let these uptight moralists win. Don't let them drag you into their own personal sewer of fear and paranoia. I will, however, give the prohibitionists one compliment. At least they didn't drink alcohol before they tried to take it from everyone else's hands. Don't misunderstand. They are wrong for trying to force their morality on others, but at least they didn't partake of what they were trying to ban. So long as politicians, pundits, and celebrities go about their daily lives with armed guards protecting them where they live, work, and play, and they are hypocrites to demand we commoners be unarmed. If you exercise your right to protect yourself, then you shouldn't demand others be defenseless targets. The first people who should be on a so-called red flag list are people who want to take away the guns from others and make them defenseless. Gun bans are the new prohibition. Moralists who once succeeded in banning all alcohol for everyone because some abused it are now attempting to ban guns for everyone. Except for the agents of force the Second Amendment was created to protect citizens against. Horrible things happened. But not because guns exist. Not because alcohol exists. Horrible things happen because people abuse guns and alcohol. Maybe these were good people that just got caught up in the misery of life and let it twist them into a villain. Maybe these were people with mental problems that prevented them from seeing the monster they were becoming. Maybe these are just batshit evil motherfuckers who are gonna hurt others no matter what. The point is, you can't blame the tool for the way it is used. So here we are, nearing the end of the second decade of the new millennium. They say we are more divided than ever, just as I'm sure they did during the Civil Rights era. Two world wars, depression, civil war, and so on. We see opposition, and we bristle. We tense up, and we prepare to fight. Sometimes verbally, and sometimes physically. I call this the Raging Rhino podcast. Raging is in the name. Anger, along with a good amount of confusion and self-reflection, were my motivation to start this podcast. I'm not as angry as I used to be, because I purposely use this podcast to sort out my own thoughts and to vent. I've mellowed quite a bit over the past decade. I could change the name, but I won't, for a few reasons. I like the alliteration, and a different R word just wouldn't sound right. I mean, what, Reasoning Rhino podcast? But by far, the most important reason I don't change the name is because I will not hide who I am or who I was. I may have mellowed, but I'm still angry. And this podcast was undeniably born out of rage. I'm still angry that we are bailing out companies that are negatively affected due to the trade war with China that we started. I'm still angry that politicians use taxpayers like an unlimited ATM and abuse what is given to them to fund unconstitutional programs. I'm angry that 127 million people chose the cult of personality in the last presidential election because they are so blind by the notion of two-party rule, they erroneously believe that they can't survive unless their side wins and enforces its morality on everybody else. It is easy, very easy, to just point fingers, blame anyone and everybody else, insult, demonize, antagonize, and focus my anger on people. To what end? I mean, I've done that in the past. I've been angry and hateful towards people. What is accomplished when you berate and accuse other people for what you think is wrong with the country? What good does it do for politicians, pundits, and celebrities to point their fingers at a television camera and blame the other side of the political aisle for all the problems in the nation? What good does it do to stand up at an awards show and foment hatred towards anyone who doesn't believe as you believe? What good does it do to twist and perverse the message of peace and acceptance of deceased social and political leaders into a call for conflict and divisiveness? Just so you can look like a big shot? Just so you can get applause from the crowd? Just so you can get your name in tomorrow's morning news? We talk about these blood-chilling shootings. Often, the murderers have radical political leanings. What if these deranged people listen, read, and absorb the anger and hatred we send out into the world? What if a left-wing entertainer sends out a tweet blaming any and all right-wingers for the latest mass shooting, and fellow entertainers and pundits support and escalate the hatred, and a mentally unstable left-winger reads it and decides to commit an atrocity against right-wingers? What if a right-wing pundit sits in front of a microphone and blames left-wingers for all the ills of the nation, and caller after caller agrees and piles on against the opposition, and a mentally unstable right-winger hears it and decides to commit violence against left-wingers? What if these deranged people have been listening to this venomous hatred for years, decades? What if we are seeing the result of all the accusations and resentment we throw at each other? What if our own lack of civility is being used as motivation to burn this country to the ground? What if it's something I said that pushed them over the line? What if it's something you posted that pushed them over? What if it's something Limbaugh said on the radio or Maddow said on TV? What if it's something the president tweeted or the squad posted on Instagram? Social media is the new tool for a lot of these politicians, isn't it? But what if there's more to it? What if, when these horrible events take place and panic is spread amongst the people, the ones who want to take away your rights secretly smile because they know it's easier to reach out to you with their rhetoric to manipulate you when you're afraid? What if history has provided us with the pieces of the puzzle and all we have to do is put them together? Many years ago, Donald Trump, who you may have forgotten used to be a darling among Democrat celebrities, stated that if he ever ran for president, he would do so as a Republican because their constituency is easier to fool. What if all this is on purpose? I've cited it before that the two major political parties of the United States are two sides of the same coin. Each side wants to force their morality on you. Each side wants to take away your rights. Each side wants to use you to fund their bureaucracy. We know from our own history, our government has no problem testing citizens without their knowledge. So we should know that no matter what politicians say, they don't really care about us. If the people of San Francisco or East St. Louis are seen as nothing more than guinea pigs, you can damn well bet you are not viewed any better. They care about our votes to get them into power, keep them in power, and grow their power over people they try to teach us to hate. We know from recent world history that collectivists use charismatic propaganda to divide the people and turn them on each other. We know after the division happens, whichever side is in control demonizes and dehumanizes the other. We know that dehumanization eventually leads to the scapegoating of those people. We know that centralized government leads to dictatorship, socialism, communism, and fascism. The world has seen this game before on other playing fields. There's nothing new under the sun. We know. You know. Don't let it happen. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.